What we should do is issue currency debt-free and base it on time unit of value, as Ithaca, New York has done for 20 years. It's something that we can do tomorrow. We don't have to wait for a vote. We don't have to wait for our kings. We don't have to be damn slaves anymore. Anymore. Do you hear me? This is the silver bullet to destroy the parasitic systems which have robbed us of our souls, which have robbed us of our will to resist. But I think it's time for the Republic, to fight back. Right here, right now.
Right here, right now, you're listening to Mountain Hours Revolution Radio. I'm your host, Wayne Walton, and we are broadcasting from the Dredge Restaurant. Dredge Studio is at the top of the Dredge Restaurant in downtown Breckenridge, Colorado, in Summit County, Colorado, where we have our own local currency. $17,000 equivalent has been created in ours without interest, without debt. There is no debt created when this currency is sprung into existence. We're trying to set this up as a laboratory for other communities to copy, and this is a growing initiative. Today's show, we are going to be speaking to Joel Angner in the first hour, and he is a political activist in both the Tea Party and the Occupy and Ron Paul revolutions. We will be discussing basically how we can get the Occupy movement and the Tea Party to unite for common cause so that they can both get what they want. And then in the second hour, we're going to have presidential candidate Scott Keller on for 30 minutes, and he's actually starting a political party, which the basis of it is creating a honest, interest-free monetary system. And we will get into that, this idea of the corrupt monetary system as being the fundamental cause of the corruption in our society is growing and growing. And not only is that awareness growing, activists who wish to utilize alternatives, not just talk about solutions, but actually implement them. That is what the entire intention is of Mountain Hours Revolution Radio, is to start bringing an audience to those voices. We need to stop listening to millionaires hired by billionaires to protect the existing system. If we continue to listen to millionaires hired by billionaires and trillionaires, we will continue with the present situation, which is offering us various levels of austerity. Do we want our benefits cut, or do we want higher taxes? Well, that's what happens when all of our energy is pushed toward a debt and interest-based money system. We currently pay $500 billion per year just to service the national debt. It's completely unnecessary. So unless we reach out to opposing factions to unite all factions against this common cause, why don't we use that $500 billion on something different? Why don't we use that for something that serves us instead of basically paying for a private money system? And that's the only reason that we do that. We have a private money system. They charge us interest to use their money. And why a fee when we can do that for free? We will be right back with Joel Angner. It's about to begin, you know what I'm saying? Now the question is, are you ready for the real revolution, which is the evolution of the mind? If you seek, then you shall find that we all come from the divine. You dig what I'm saying? Now if you take heed to the words of wisdom that are written on the walls of life, then universally we will stand.
Hey, aloha, I'm Joby Weeks from Breckenridge, Colorado. What are Mountain Hours? It's organic money that we've been using in Summit County, Colorado. That's right, you heard me correctly, organic money. How can Mountain Hours benefit you? Mountain Hours expand the local money supply and keep the money in the community. Mountain Hours promote and expand local shopping with an endless multiplier. Mountain Hours almost doubles the local minimum wage to $10, benefiting not only workers but businesses as well, who find new and loyal customers. Mountain Hours enables shoppers to afford premium prices for locally crafted goods and for locally grown organic food. Mountain Hours helps start new businesses and creates jobs. It reduces dependence on imports and transportation fuels. Mountain Hours will make grants to nonprofit community organizations and zero-interest loans. Mountain Hours stimulate community pride and help everyone become more prosperous.
Join the Mountain Hours revolution. Are you a keeper or abolitionist of usury? This is the true debate between debt slaves, which will lead to their emancipation. The parasitic usurers have created many Hegelian dialects, which they remain in control no matter who wins. Example, Coke or Pepsi, Democrat or Republican, progressive or conservative. Here's a good one, gold money or worthless fiat paper. The parasitic usurer can enslave the people on gold, silver, paper, or digital money creation and lending. The parasitic usurer can dominate societies with big government, small government, or even no government. The people can have abundance this year once they realize that usury is the original sin of the world's monetary and economic problems. The real debate is, are you a keeper or abolitionist of the mathematic fraud of usury-based money creation and lending? The emancipation of global debt slaves is the human rights cause of all time. Jubilee 2012 via MountainHours.com. Are you a keeper or abolitionist of usury? This is the true debate between debt slaves, which will lead to their emancipation. The parasitic usurers have created many Hegelian dialects, which they remain in control no matter who wins. Example, Coke or Pepsi, Democrat or Republican, progressive or conservative. Here's a good one, gold money or worthless fiat paper. The parasitic usurer can enslave the people on gold, silver, paper, or digital money creation and lending. The parasitic usurer can dominate societies with big government, small government, or even no government. The people can have abundance this year once they realize that usury is the original sin of the world's monetary and economic problems. The real debate is, are you a keeper or abolitionist of the mathematic fraud of usury-based money creation and lending? The emancipation of global debt slaves is the human rights cause of all time. Jubilee 2012 via MountainHours.com.
We go our own way when we shine the light. We go our own way because we know it's right. Blessings be for the people in the good fight. Hold on, cause it's gonna be using the political and spiritual, melodic to the lyrical, explicit and satirical, but utterly sincere for you. We give it away like the Chili Peppers did, and the Funky Monks are here to repeal the deficit. It could be good if the people.
You're listening to Mountain Hours Revolution Radio. I am your host, Wayne Walton, and this hour we joined with a very special guest from the Front Range. He's been an activist in the Tea Party, the Occupy, and the Ron Paul movement. And we are basically hoping, you know, when you have an individual that can interact with all of these groups, they become a diplomat of sorts. And that's what we want to do, is we need more diplomats that unite us more than tools for the state to enslave us by keeping us perpetually divided. So, Joel Anchner, are you there?
Hey, how's it going, Wayne?
Okay, excellent, excellent. And
okay.
All right. Well, I was hoping to first off, if you could kind of just describe your political awakening, like how you came to the becoming politically awake, what made you care and recognize that the existing two-party paradigm is just an illusion.
Well, to give a little bit of background to those that might not know, I am the son of two American-born parents who converted to Islam before my birth. So I was raised with a little bit of a unique background, so to speak, especially in terms of how being Muslim, looking at usury and what usury was and being aware of it. There's the thing is that, you know, I kind of base myself off the preposition that maybe that's one of the reasons why we went into all these Middle Eastern countries was because there was no centralized usury, and we needed to pave the way in terms of creating an environment for that would be helpful for a central bank to be able to take control. Now, with that being said, my parents were also pretty politically aware. Now, granted, they were Democrats, but they didn't trust the government really in any way, shape, or form. My mother came from a defense background and her father actually had been involved in military intelligence. He fought through World War II, was part of the Big Red One, went on to work for OSS, which later is what evolved into NSA. He was the bodyguard of Lyndon B. Johnson at one time, right around the time when Kennedy was assassinated. And then my father's family were business magnates with a Masonic background. My grandfather, my father's side, was a 32nd degree Mason. You know, honest living guy, really don't think he could have ever been involved with anything too underhanded, because he never made it past that 32nd degree. But there was some awareness there, knowing that a lot of what we see in the day to day, in the media, in the news, is theater, and that it's theater for the sake of helping people define their own realities. Because when you help people define their realities, if you can then control that reality, especially through the use of currency and regulations, then basically you build a labyrinth, and you can direct the rats to what part of the labyrinth you want them to get to, but making the rats think that there's always cheese. Well, when I was about 8 years old, I was in the car with my mom, and we were talking about something, and I asked her, you know, I wonder what life's going to be like when, you know, when I'm 40, you know, when this and this happens by the end of this time. And she honestly turned around and looked at me. She's like, you know, Joel, I love you dearly, but I don't think that numbers are in anybody's favor, that the world's going to necessarily last that long, or that we might even live to be that age. And I was like, well, Mom, what are you talking about? And she basically broke it down for me. And where she got this information, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sure if this was stuff through osmosis of being the daughter of my grandfather that she was able to absorb, or if it was all based upon her own reading at the time. This was 1984, ironically enough, when she told me this. And she said that, you know, essentially you have a one world, you know, there's people behind the scenes that are trying to create a one world government. They're going to abolish religion. They're going to use banks to take over everything. They're going to keep people in a perpetual state of war. And, you know, she flat out told me, I'd be surprised if there's much alive on the planet, like by the time you would like to reach that age. You know, and you know, so my parents were pretty open about what their expectations of things were and what they thought was coming down the pike. And so that always kind of kept me aware. Now, with that being said, they were Democrats. My father actually, right up through, you know, some of the last photographs and some of the time I got to spend with my father before his death was during the Obama campaign, when both of us were working on it together, him in the Springs and me in Denver as a precinct captain. You know, going full steam up there, you know, to get out the vote. I've, you know, unfortunately, pictures of me out on the streets with my son, you know, signing up voters, and I gave a ton of money to MoveOn.org, a ton of money to Obama's campaign. And, you know, in retrospect, looking at it, the reason I did that was because I was so disenfranchised by Bush. You know, this was a time period, you know, when I was just starting to, you know, growing from being a early, you know, adult, late adolescent into becoming a man with responsibilities, and really was pretty worried about the world that we were seeing coming down at us, because a lot of the stuff that my mother had been talking about, I saw, you know, Bush implementing, where we're talking about stuff like wars based upon phony evidence, 9/11, Patriot Act, the use of wiretapping American citizens, you know, things like that. And, you know, I really thought that Obama was going to be a breath of fresh air. I like that. I'll be honest, I was hoping he was Muslim. I know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, think that that's the end of the world. And I tell you, he's not, because Muslims, you know, true Muslims don't go around blowing each other's countries like that. Not on that grand of a scale. But to be honest, you know, when you look at his policies, and you saw this very early on in his presidency, I mean, within the first 2 weeks of his administration, here's a guy who said he was going to have no lobbyists, and he had 17 lobbyists within those first 2 weeks that were hired directly on his payroll. You know, then when you saw the relationships with, like, Larry Summers and Timothy Geithner, and you saw basically not just capitulation to Wall Street, but not even offering up any resistance, basically rolling out a red carpet for them, you know, it became very clear that this was not the game changer we thought we were going to have. This was basically an extension of the game. And if anything, ratcheting up on the strategies and the methodology of the game and the severity of the consequences of the opponents of the game. And from that point forward, you know, I started paying more attention to Ron Paul at the time. And I know that there's some controversy around, you know, his desire to talking about what some consider to be a platitude of sound money going back to the gold standard. But, you know, I think that a lot, what your feelings are on that, you know, most people have to say objectively within the liberty movement that Ron Paul has been a magnet and an engine and a catalyst for the awakening of a lot of folks. You know, because from there, you know, I read Liberty Defined and the Fed, and then from there started participating with our local Austrian portion of the Pikes Peak Economics Club and started hanging out with some of the folks from the Green Dragon Tavern, which is made up of primarily Tea Party folks before the Tea Party was ever mentioned in the news. People that were free market, liberty-minded constitutionalists. And, you know, all I really had to do was just keep my eyes open, practicing critical thought. And then after being exposed to, you know, some people would consider philosophers, you know, like Stefan Molyneux and whatnot, and witnessing the accuracy of Peter Schiff's predictions and learning more about Austrian economics and learning more about liberty, and then analyzing that and actually putting that up against my own personal value systems and what I feel my responsibilities are and what other people's responsibilities are and how, you know, in Islam we're taught, you know, and not to say all Muslims practice this, but there should be no compulsion in religion. And, you know, the concept is that, you know, there should be no coercion, there should be no force, there should be no aggression, you know, in religion and basically in philosophy and ideals. You know, that I was taught growing up that, you know, you attracted people to Islam by, you know, living right and having great manners and good things will come to you and having an air about you of what's known as Nur, which means light, very much in the same way that Christhood means light. And that when you have that Nur, people will just kind of want to follow you by example. You don't have to force things down their throat. And that's one of the things that I started to see. There's like all these congruencies between the defined concepts of liberty and my own personal value system in terms of how it was defined with my love for my creator or our creator. And from that point forward, you know, I looked at the situation and, you know, I look at my child who I love dearly and who I want to have a beautiful future. And I want him to be able to be free to fail and free to succeed and to start his own businesses and come up with his own ideas. And I don't want him to be forced to live in this maze that other people have created for us. Because that maze itself is very much like the Matrix that was in the Keanu Reeves movies. And so the best thing we can do is we all need to play a little part of Neo, and we all need to play a little part of Morpheus, and try to unplug as many people as possible. And that's why I'm so excited about what you're doing, because when I look at it, you know, there's three pillars to that matrix. There's essentially three major components, and the first one is energy, because energy leads to agriculture. Then agriculture leads to the next one, which is food. And then energy and food, you know, however, are dictated and controlled by money and by capital. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing. But when you have people that can arbitrarily create capital and define its value that we're not even able to vote into office in our democratic republic, like they're appointed by a guy who, you know, is dependent upon their checks, you know, it's essentially there's such a huge conflict of interest there. Anyway, we need to get past those three pillars. And so one of those pillars, obviously, is currency. And currency needs to go from usury, from being debt-based, to being something that's, you know, credit-based or equity-based. And I'm really excited to be talking to you about that. And thank you for giving me the time to speak a little with you.
Yeah, we're going to be going to a break here in a few moments. And I, yeah, that's... It's such a diverse background. That's a whole lot of a very unique background. And we'll have more from Joel Angner right after these quick break.
Realizing the third world cancerous fractions, cutting down the populace on the name of.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Theravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Theravim? Simple. Theravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372, or go to Theravim.com. That's TERRAVIM.com. Theravim, the best supplements on earth.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experience process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Do you need that sustained boost of energy, but want a more natural way of attaining it without the jolt and crash or the jitters you get from coffee and energy drinks? Zoom Tea is the healthy, sugar-free pick-me-up for body, mind, and soul. Does your coffee help you with weight control, mental clarity, anti-cancer properties, or give you an immune system boost? How about helping to stabilize your blood pressure, reduce your cholesterol, and increase your regularity? Now you can have all these health benefits with Zoom Tea. Check out ZoomTea.com or call our friendly staff at 575-936-7000. That's 575-936-7000. A one-month supply of Zoom Tea is only $20, and you get free shipping. Add chai seed to your order for only $12.95 to increase your benefits. Go to ZoomTea.com. That's ZoomTea.com to learn more.
You're listening to Mountain Hours Revolution Radio. I'm your host, Wayne Walton, and we broadcast weekdays from 1 to 3 o'clock Mountain Time. You can listen on our free listen line at 970-817-5881. Alternatively, you can stream this broadcast at republicbroadcasting.org, Studio B, and we are available there as well. Please do turn in, because we are not a talk radio, we are a Jew radio, and what we intend to do is unite all of the people together and create abundance through a evolved and benevolent monetary system, one without usury, riba, or interest. All of those things mean the same thing. And our guest this hour is Joel Angner. And Joel, in uniting the factions, the prime thing that voluntarists or libertarians believe in is the non-aggression principle. For the listeners, could you describe what that is, and why is that not taught in our schools?
Well, it's not taught in our schools because, essentially, for one to believe in it makes you understand that the whole system that we're taught in our schools is violating this principle. The non-aggression principle is as simple. I mean, you don't force people to do things. You don't, and by force, I mean leave them under these threats of imprisonment and violence. And, you know, it's essentially, if you look back at the majority of religions, like it's really another way of saying that what I believe, you know, if you had to put Jesus's teaching into a bumper sticker, it would be treat others as you would like to be treated. And none of us like to be forced things. None of us like to be forced ideas or forced to go to war or forced to pay for wars or forced to pray to a certain God or forced not to pray to a certain God or, you know, we all make choices in life, and those choices dictate what our responsibilities are and therefore what we need to do. But to have one group of authorities, whether that be a group of bankers or, you know, a group of bureaucrats or guys who float in between both worlds, to have them force their definition, I mean, it really comes down to this, to have them force their definition of reality upon us, define the rules, and then we're subject to having to live within, again, the labyrinth or the maze that they build for us, it defeats the purpose, I think, of life itself in terms of having consciousness, because you're not able to explore and reach your true potential, your potential, and how close you can get to realizing is always going to be defined by those authoritarians. And once again, whether it's bureaucrats, bankers, or both. And that right there, we're forced to live in that reality. And so the non-aggression principle, essentially, you know, I don't want to force my reality on other people. I want to define and create my own reality. I want to share with my children until they get to come to such an age where they can choose another reality or choose to modify it. But to force that limits creation itself. Can you imagine, you know, like corn forcing like tomatoes through their evolution of how the tomatoes are going to grow? Things will happen naturally, you know, in terms of mutations and the crop's ability to weather certain weather patterns, et cetera. But you would lose out, as we have now, on all these different variations of corn or all these different variations of tomatoes or all these different variations of flowers, et cetera. You know, we are humans, and we are capable of vast potential. And to have a bunch of guys just because they went to Harvard and Yale, and their dads were in the Skull and Bone Society, or you know, happen to work, you know, for this financial institution or that financial institution, to call the shots for us, is just there's no level of or semblance of any kind of justice in that. And that should be. And
would, if, you, would you say then? I think we'd all agree that the non-aggression principle would be supported across all religions, all races, all political parties, or it should be. It should be the basis, the very fundamental basis of any social compact, any government, and any honest relationship.
Well, you know, there's only a few systems, most of them being tyrannical in nature, that aren't congruent with the non-aggression principle. But, I mean, whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, you know, even, you know, some forms of Luciferianism and Satanism, you know, they talk about, like, not forcing, like, and granted, who knows if they actually follow that, but even, like, some of the teachings of Aleister Crowley, you know, talk about that, you know, whether you're a socialist, a communist, you know, like, in your own interactions during the day, people don't want to be forced, you know, to have to choose this kind of sandwich or forced to choose this or that, but, so yeah, I do agree with you. However, we get conditioned to accepting force in certain areas, such as paying taxes and you know, registering for the draft and things like that, to paying for wars. That we're so accustomed to it that we don't even think of that as being force. And we don't think about that as being aggression, but you know, we need to look at things objectively and critically and come to the conclusion that, you know, when they take money out of my check without even me asking, you know, back when I was on a W-2 job, so that we can pay back the minimum monthly credit card bill to the Federal Reserve so I can bomb kids in Libya and Iraq and Afghanistan so that Halliburton can get more of our tax dollars to go there and rebuild stuff, and to make their companies more profitable. You know,
right. Let me cut you off there if I could. We've got a break here. We've got for the long segment.
Yes, sir.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Money is a form of energy transfer technology which can be used for good or evil. Currently, it is evil because, one, it is based on a debt with interest which is mathematically unsustainable and results in exponentially compounding debt. Two, the money power is stolen by the parasites and spent by them first instead of the producer. Three, the parasites control its distribution in a top-down system. The currency then flows in economic circuits which support the values of the oligarchy. 4. The parasite purposely expands and contracts the supply to engineer foreclosures, bankruptcies, and loss of sovereignty. Solution? Usury-free local currency energy transfer technology permits the people to harness their own commercial energy. Only then are they sovereign to finance projects which support their values in a sustainable manner. No longer are the people in a condition whereby they are a dog which begs its own fleas for some of its own blood back. MountainHours.com. The people are the money. Money is energy transfer technology which is better than barter. Let's go back to basics to determine what money is. Before money, the people barter their services and products. A perfect barter system is one in which the participants can provide everything they need to sustain life. With this system, they are sovereign and independent. Imagine there are 25 businesses in this perfect barter system. They could get what they needed without Federal Reserve notes and sustain life. The problem with barter is that you need to find a person to have a direct trade with at a precise time. What if each business in the barter network created a $100 gift certificate out of thin air? The barter network could then trade gift certificates as a form of money without having to find a direct part. Paper money does not counterfeit. People counterfeit. Summit County Currency Cooperative is an honest issuer that keeps the quantity of money equal to the capacity of the producers in the network. Don't fall for the Rothschild's gold money disinformation. The elite control gold and silver, and the people will have to borrow it from them with usury. The people are the gold and can create money which makes them sovereign and independent from the parasitic usurers. MountainHours.com. Are you a keeper or abolitionist of usury? This is the true debate between debt slaves which will lead to their emancipation. The parasitic usurers have created many Hegelian dialects which they remain in control no matter who wins. Example, Coke or Pepsi, Democrat or Republican, progressive or conservative. Here's a good one, gold money or worthless fiat paper. The parasitic usurer can enslave the people on gold, silver, paper, or digital money creation and lending. The parasitic usurer can dominate societies with big government, small government, or even no government. The people can have abundance this year once they realize that usury is the original sin of the world's monetary and economic problems. The real debate is, are you a keeper or abolitionist of the mathematic fraud of usury-based money creation and lending? The emancipation of global debt slaves is the human rights cause of all time. Jubilee 2012 via MountainHours.com.
What should be the proper relationship between a chairman of the Fed and a president of the United States?
Well, first of all, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency, and that means basically that there is no other agency of government which can overrule actions that we take.
That was former Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan indicating that as a representative for Mammon, or the parasitic usurers, that they are the sovereigns, and that will always occur in any society where usury is permitted, because eventually the exponentially compounding debt will overwhelm the capacity of the producers to keep up with it. The people will default. They will then lose their sovereignty. So to fix that, we are joined with our guest, Joel Aigner, and we are looking for remedies for that. And so the substantiation is, number one, is we need to have the non-aggression principle, and that will meet the needs, the philosophical needs of the people, libertarians, voluntarists, et cetera. And then if we could put our hat on of the, let's call them Occupy people, Green Party, or the progressive movement, so-called, generally what they want to look out is for the concerns of the poor. Well, we have to find a financing source to make sure that we meet the obligations, the contracts, the social contracts that we've made. So do you believe that that would be the basis for an agreement between the Tea Party and Occupy movements, Joel?
I would hope so. You know, that was one of the things that I was trying to focus on towards the beginning of Occupy was, actually, there was a letter that I'd sent you earlier. I don't know if you had a chance to look over it. This was a letter that I had sent out to the editor of the Colorado Springs Independent, which is our alternative weekly here. It is a little bit less leaning. There had been an article that had been produced in there that essentially was trying to draw a black and white line of opposition between the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. And, you know, what I put forth in my piece of correspondence to him was essentially showing that, you know, the concept of social justice is not, you know, exclusive of small government and you know, limited government. You know, because when I first went to Occupy Wall Street, you know, a lot of the folks that I saw there, you know, had signs that were related to, you know, quantitative easing, derivatives, fractional reserve banking, ending the Fed, et cetera. And, you know, when you looked at the problems of what perhaps some of the more left-leaning folks of Occupy, what they were talking about, they were talking about people losing their homes and paying for wars. And you know, these issues, they're not right or left, man. It's really simple. It's right or wrong. And, you know, when, you know, there's a lot of people that think that, you know, as libertarians, that we throw people to the wolves, and that, you know, they have us branded with this Koch brothers version of libertarianism, where it's libertarianism for the corporations. And, you know, what I think that at the end of the day, like, I think that whether you're right or left, you know, I think that we can all agree, once we've explored it to its natural conclusion, that a leaving maritime and admiralty law and having to return to common law essentially would solve a lot of the problems. And in fact, you know, it would remove corporate personhood, so then you wouldn't have these corporate veils that people could hide behind and pollute the, you know, the ecology with. You know, there's, and actually for a lot of people out there, there's a gentleman named Walter Block who does a really good job of explaining libertarian solutions to different environmental and ecological issues. With the concept being is that, you know, when you pollute a stream and a river and the air that we all drink off of and breathe, you're violating the non-aggression principle, and you're basically you're violating our property rights, because we deserve, and our future generations deserve, to have clean air, and we deserve to have clean water, and those are rights. Because the concept of common law and what the Bill of Rights, you know, really says, and what the Magna Carta really it says, you know, these aren't rights that the government grants you. You know, that's a problem. That's a problem with the concept of civil rights to a certain degree, because you're asking the government for these rights. These are rights that you already have just because you exist and you're a sentient being. Like, and, you know, I think that whether somebody's socialist or libertarian, I think that at the end of the day, you know, hopefully people can come to an agreement on the fact that that is the most just way to be. And, you know, like, if we're talking about morality, we're talking about justice, what could be more just than that? And essentially, what those rights basically give you is a right to live in dignity. And, you know, when people go towards being, you know, towards the left and towards being a socialist, a lot of times because they witness that people aren't living in dignity, and they can connect a very real dot between that and the you know, the financial elite. Now, one of the places where Occupy Wall Street got a little confused was this concept of the 1% and the 99%. Because to be in the 1%, that only really means you're making like $428,000 a year, which really is kind of middle class. I mean, granted, it's you know, high middle class, but, you know, that's some guy that runs like a mechanic shop or, you know, a car dealership or even a dispensary, you know, could be making that much. What we're talking about here really is, you know, we're talking about a group of maybe 6,000 people that control all the little knobs of all finance in the whole world. And if you control the little knobs of little finance and the interest rates and who gets the money, you control the whole world. I mean, I also encourage other people to Google economic hitmen and learn about what the IMF does to countries, where a country will go to war and then they'll be broke trying to fight war, so they get a loan, then they use basically their natural resources or natural assets as collateral for that loan. Then once they start to default on that loan, the IMF goes in there and takes over their diamond mines or their gold or their oil fields or their paper or whatever. And, you know, that's why we have really like 147 corporations that control like another 6,000 corporations that then therefore control every other corporation. And it's disconcerting because obviously it leads to what's really the antithesis of a free market, you know. And if people really study history, like a lot of these robber barons that people, you know, like to hold up and say, well, look at how this guy used the free market to rape everybody, you know, whether, you know, for instance, like the Rockefellers. If you actually research the Rockefellers, they had no interest in a free market. They bought up their competition so that they could stabilize prices to make sure that they always controlled prices. And if you what you look at right now, like it has nothing to do with the free market, even for those that say that the free market people. You know, a lot of the Republicans like really are collectivists and basically socialists of their own right, except they're for corporate socialism as opposed to, you know, citizen socialism. You know, and so we need to have people really just start looking in the mirror and asking themselves who they really are. And it comes down to a fundamental question. Do you own yourself, or are you owned by the state and the bankers? If the state and the bankers don't own you, at the end of the day, you are a libertarian.
It's that simple, is that as free people, everybody, as we indicated before, would support any rational person should support the non-aggression principle, and that we won't initiate violence ourselves. Additionally, we won't subcontract that right to somebody else, some third party, in order for us to get what we want. However, the reality of the world is that there are always going to be some people in need, temporarily and permanently, depending upon particular physical challenges that they might have. So, and in terms of a legacy issue, we have commitments for Social Security and, you know, military pensions, et cetera, et cetera. How can we finance those without the coercion of the violence of the state? So that is the riddle, is how do we finance a system that some of our commercial energy is channeled toward guaranteeing these contracts? And ultimately, I don't think, you know, a socialist, ultimately, if these programs are being funded, I don't think they'll, if they had an option between a violent system that was based on coercion and another system based upon voluntary action, but it was a system rather than just the benevolence of individuals, but it was a systemized program that it was set up within the monetary system, that it was set up within the lending system, I believe that most socialists would opt or the voluntary system if it existed there. Do you believe that with your interaction with people at Occupy that generally they would be in agreement with that?
Yeah, I believe so. You know, one of my observations with the people from Occupy, even those that I disagree with or vehemently disagree with, is that they're there because they witness that there is and know that there's something wrong, and they want to fix it, and they're willing to take risks to fix it, and they're passionate about it, and they're willing to put themselves on the front line to do that and be ridiculed, and it takes courage. And so even though I might disagree on the dynamics and the details of the solution, we both recognize the same problem. And that really is a... That is kind of a tricky problem to address, but one of the things that I think people need to realize is that with a free market, you really have, because of the lack of government regulation, and we can get into basically how you can still protect the environment without government regulation if you like. There are a couple ideas about that as well. But when it comes to a lack of government regulation, you're going to have a lot more opportunities for businesses to flourish. Energy is a great example of that. Not just talking about solar or wind, but also talking about free energy and hydrogen and other things of that nature, and even non-radioactive nuclear technologies that are out there. So you could take these monies that, you know, let's say that there's X amount of dollars in Social Security right now, and obviously maybe it only has X amount of years left of shelf life, and that's dependent upon certain people's projections, which are going to be tainted depending upon what color are the glasses they're looking at it out of. So you could take basically that existing capital and perhaps put it into a non-radioactive, nuclear power plant, you know, investing into that kind of technology, and then that portion of that fund would grow and therefore provide for meeting those obligations out of this new kind of energy economy. The problem is that once we remove the cookie cutter labyrinth that we're all forced to live in and color the lines that we're forced to color in right now, in terms of a lot of these different ways that we could keep capital flowing and money basically, flowing from point A to point B and growing, would be to let the leash off of a lot of these technologies. There's a lot of health technologies that are being suppressed, obviously, by the FDA right now, which, you know, operates under the guise that it's supposed to be protecting us. Meanwhile, all they're doing is creating monopolies of pharmacies. You know, how much more of that Social Security or perhaps those military funds could we invest into these other areas that have huge potential for growth, more potential for growth than the stock market does right now or other money markets, allowing the growth of those industries to fund our current obligations and to keep those contracts. Meanwhile, allowing our generation and then the generations that come after us, you know, these greater opportunities to provide for themselves and their families and realize their potential and to make the world a better place. The fact of the matter is that when you look at the history of government, you know, and people, granted, will say this about the idea of the free market, but I think if you actually objectively analyze history, you'll see that a real free market has never existed, and also time period without government has not necessarily existed, like a true voluntarist society, and that this, where we are in human consciousness, you know, we I don't think we can even really imagine how good things can get without having a centralized authority that basically defines our reality for us. And we I think there'll be a lot of opportunities for growing revenue and for growing abundance. And I think really that government, like at the end of the day, stifles it for the sake of controlling it to consolidate it.
Yeah, it's a paradigm that's in need of radical change. I think, when I've gone to Occupy Sexual, we met one another probably five or six times, and they were, one of the things I preferred about Occupy was that they always had an open microphone. You could always address the group, whereas at many of the Tea Party events that I went to, the microphone and the stage was dominated. It was scheduled. And it wasn't a very open forum. All of the ideas were being dictated by so-called experts on the stage, and often those experts, that these are neocon kind of Tea Party events. It was very controlled.
It's definitely not a free market of ideas, that's for sure.
Yeah. So where would you believe, like, if we're trying to say, you know, open up this olive branch, where would you go to try to speak to people on the left? How can we engage them as an audience, not, you know, get past the gatekeepers, so to speak? Where's the best place to reach out to that, the progressive left, let's call it?
I mean, really, I think that there are certain initiatives that we can all agree on. One of the things where I saw a lot of cooperation between the left and the right in terms of the peaceful revolutionary movement was, for instance, with a lot of the cybersecurity bills, such as SOPA and CISPA and PIPA and ACTA. Another area that we saw a lot of this is Monsanto. Other areas where we see this is the war. So, for instance, when we have either whether they're direct actions, working groups, Facebook groups, meetings, or events or rallies. You know, there's a lot of issues where so-called libertarians and then Occupy Wall Street like see things eye to eye. So I mean, once again, you know, when it comes to genetically modified foods, cybersecurity, war, etc., Wall Street, banking, there's a lot of common ground there. And you know, so it does take people like us to kind of act as ambassadors between both groups. You know, one of the things that in the liberty movement that I see happen, and I'm guilty of this myself, Lord knows, it's a personal shortcoming of mine and of others, is that we are so confident in our position within the liberty movement, and rightfully so, that you know it's hard sometimes for us not to be aggressive and therefore violate the non-aggression principle when it comes to refutation of other people's political beliefs or ideas. And you know, so I would encourage people on both sides of that aisle, because the fact of the matter is you know, we do not want to be victims of theirs, meaning the powers that be's divide and conquer strategy, and we can get a lot more done on these very key important issues if we work together. And the fact of the matter is,
we've got another break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Hey there. My name is Frank Bates. What I'm about to tell you in the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at slashpower123.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are, incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up, and you will be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at slashpower123.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to slashpower123.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at slashpower123.com before they force me to shut it down. Again, that's slashpower123.com.
We go our own way when we shine the light. We go our own way cause we know it's right. Blessings be for the people in the good fight. Hold on cause it's gonna be using the political and spiritual, melodic to the lyrical, explicit and satirical, but utterly sincere for you. We give it away like the chili pepper.
whoever's did. And the funky monks are here to repeal the deficit.
It could be good if the people would come together, organize the streets in the hood. It's not a ghetto thing, yo, we're not gangsta.
So this is Mountain Mavericks Revolution Radio. I am your host, Wayne Walton, and we are joined with Joel Aigner. We're in our last segment. Joel, what is the best place for people to reach you and connect out in the you're in the Colorado Springs area, and what would be the best way for them to interact and grow the tribe?
Yeah, I used to have a couple of I am involved with the We Are Change of Colorado Springs, and of course we have our We Are Change ColoradoSprings.org. Of course, we also have our Facebook page. To be honest, though, like I used to run a couple other Liberty Facebook groups and noticed that I really just got more traffic on my personal page. I'm self-employed. I'm not worried about pleasing the man or having to answer to any employers, really. So I just really direct a lot of the traffic to that page in terms of where I post musings, news, and treat it as a group in and of itself. You can find that at Facebook. Joel, J-O-E-L, Aigner, A-I-G-N-E-R. And if anybody's coming into Colorado Springs or would like to reach out to me via telephone, you can do so at 719-425-9242. Now, that's a Google number, so while you can't text to it, if you do leave a voicemail, it's sent to me as a text. I'm always into different journalistic efforts, explorations, and adventures, any kind of organizing of direct actions, particularly as they relate to home foreclosures, is kind of a key pet project of mine. I'm always interested in getting involved with any of that kind of stuff. I'm good at, you know, being able to look at a person's particular situation and see if there's any opportunity there to kind of fight back a little bit. And then meanwhile, I really want everybody to start thinking about what they in their own personal capacities can do to try to take off those three leashes around not just their own neck, but the neck of their communities. And those leashes, once again, are energy, currency, and food. You know, so, but whether on a national, international, or a local level, if anybody ever feels free, you know, feels like reaching out to us and trying to get involved and have any ideas of anything to keep us busy and make an impact. I'm always looking forward to meeting other revolutionaries.
Have you had any interaction with We Are Change in Colorado Springs, et cetera, with respect to working on a local currency there?
I've talked to you about it a few times, and I've put it forth. It's something that I would love to get involved in. I've actually approached a couple of people that are a little bit higher up in the food chain to try to get a little bit of backing to make something like that happen. Because, to be honest, I think doing so would be a full-time effort. And, you know, while my business is not quite self-sustaining enough to where I can take my eyes off it for too many hours per day, but that is something that I do see as being key. It's something that if I had a list of top three things to address, that's really one of them. But honestly, have not put too much rubber to the road on that myself. But I would like to make that change.
Yeah, we're making a Mountain Hours a virtual system, and we want to essentially make this something that other communities can easily replicate by virtue of it being a virtual system. And so we'll have to address that later on. But we are out of time, unfortunately. The time went very quick. And we will be proud to have you back. Once again, it's Joel Aigner, J-O-E-L-A-I-G-N-E-R. Look him up on Facebook. And thanks for the appearance, Joel.
Hey, thank you so much, Wayne. Good luck with everything. Keep up the good fight.
All right. Thanks, you too.
This is Farron, host of The Real News Radio. I want